Well, Your Honors, may I please the court? I'm Jim Haley on behalf of Appellant Charles Monroe in the matter of Monroe versus State. Your Honors, I thought I'd spend a moment very briefly describing to the court about a one-minute interaction that occurred between Wilmington police officers and Charles Monroe on the date in question. If you understand that 1 minute, I would argue to you the rest of it becomes relatively simple. Mr. Monroe was stopped for an expired tag on the back of his vehicle by Wilmington police officers Fox and Pewitt. They approached his vehicle, asked for his documentation, produced the driver's license, but no valid insurance, no valid registration. They returned to their vehicle, looked up the information on their computer, saw that he had no warrants, no charges pending. He did, though, have a prior history of criminal convictions, and they decided, based on the two motor vehicle violations of no insurance, no registration, they were going to impound his vehicle. And so they returned to the Monroe vehicle with the intention of asking him to step out of that vehicle, place him in the back of their patrol vehicle, and then do an inventory of his vehicle in his presence so he could see what was happening, recover his property if necessary, before they then towed that vehicle to a tow yard for having no valid insurance and no registration. They got him out of that vehicle and asked him to place his hands on the back of his vehicle to pat him down before placing it in the back of their patrol vehicle. At that point, Mr. Monroe became agitated and attempted to break from the officer's grip. They restrained him and recovered a handgun from his waistband and the back of his in the small of his back. And it's that interaction that we're here about. Superior Court decided that that interaction, the police handling of that, was proper. It was a legally requested pat-down search, and such so the gun recovered was legally obtained.
I was looking for the actual words of the Superior Court judge. Where are they in the record?
No, I don't. We have the transcript. Your Honor has the transcript also. I don't believe at the end of that.
I know you've represented what the judge said, but
right.
Shouldn't we have the words?
Your Honor, I believe maybe perhaps the docket, I'll double check the docket. The docket might be the only reference to the result of that suppression motion.
Well, I think that says motion to suppress denied. But
And that's it that I know of.
Was that all the judge said?
I believe so, Your Honor, in that I wasn't Monroe's counsel at the time at that hearing, and I've got the transcript of that suppression hearing the day before trial. It preceded trial the next day, and that gun was part of the evidence that was submitted at trial the next day. And
Do you have the full transcript? Because I think what's of record before us is only excerpts.
My understanding is the full transcript, Your Honor. I can't vouch for that. I didn't request it myself. My understanding, this is the entire transcript of what happened the 2 days that are issue here, the suppression motion hearing, and then the trial next day. In any event, whatever the rationale was, the result was, of course, that motion was denied. And it's our contention that that was improperly denied because there's no grounds for a Terry search. A Terry search follows not from getting a subject out of a vehicle pursuant to a vehicle stop. It follows from some reasonable suspicion based on that subject's appearance or behavior that the subject might be armed and dangerous and present a threat to the officer. If there is no such presentation to the officer, he is not authorized to conduct a Terry search of the subject.
Why wouldn't the totality of the circumstances here show that?
Well, the only circumstances are, Your Honor, a vehicle stop, number one. And the court was clear in Mims, of course, that that alone isn't good enough for a circumstance. The only other circumstance I was pointed to was that they saw a prior history that gave them some cause for concern, and perhaps it might have heightened their concern that this person has a prior history of criminal activity. But That is the only thing they knew when they decided to go search, get Mr. Monroe out of that vehicle and then search him. And it was a generalized approach to him. The court's clear in Terry and other cases that it's got to be a particularized approach to this particular defendant. And history alone is not enough of a particularized basis to get to a search of that subject. It's got to be some kind of presentation that can point it to about that person's demeanor, behavior, et cetera, appearance. In Mims, of course, the officer saw a bulge. It appeared might be a gun when he got that subject out of the vehicle, and he then searched that subject before giving him a traffic citation and found the gun. There's no such appearance here about Mr. Monroe to disclose that he might be armed or dangerous. So,
well, don't we have a different circumstance here than just a classic Terry stop situation? Because, as I understand the facts, there was no attempt to pat him down just because they had stopped him. The pat down had to do with the fact that they were going to impound his car, and he had to be put in their police vehicle and taken, you know, someplace because he didn't have his car to drive home. And that at that point, you've got a person that's an unknown person that you're putting in a police car, and you've got questions of officer safety. What's the problem with that kind of an analysis?
Well, the problem, Your Honor, is that placing him in the back of that vehicle is not a consensual, has to be a consensual act, we would submit. He's not he's not under arrest. The officers were clear about that. They had citations written out to hand to him. So our position is that the citizen could properly say, thanks for the offer of a ride home, officers. I live two blocks away. I'd like to walk home. And I'll take those citations from you, and you can inventory my vehicle, and I can stand here on the sidewalk and watch you do that. But I'd rather spend my time out here in the fresh air than in the back of your patrol vehicle, where my neighbors and community might see me and wonder about what I'm doing in the back of a police vehicle. And there's no authority to get him in the back of that police vehicle other than officer convenience, and that's not a good enough basis, we would say, submit, Your Honor, to justify that kind of invasion of his privacy without his consent.
So if I understand you, you're saying that the police, before they patted him down, would have had to ask him, would you like a ride in our car to, you know, some convenient place? And since they didn't ask him that question, or at least I don't know that the record conveys whether they asked him that or not, but without having asked that question, they can't assume that he's going to take a ride, and therefore they've got no issues of officer safety?
That's right, Your Honor. We would submit that he has that legal right to decline a ride, and they can't put him in their vehicle unless they're arresting him. They may have had authority to arrest him if they wanted to proceed in that fashion, but they elected to have citation summons written up, ready to hand to him. And they made a point of telling him that you're not under arrest, sir. We don't want you to get agitated here. We're not going to put you in cuffs, for example. And that is the subject's option to have that right to how he wants to proceed.
And, even though they said they weren't intending to arrest him, isn't that in effect what they did?
Well, I would say no, Your Honor, because that sort of slippery point came up in the Knowles versus United States or Knowles versus Iowa case, and excuse me, Ron. In Iowa, the state of Iowa had a statute that says persons stopped for motor vehicle violation can be either handed a summons or arrested. It's the officer's discretion which they're going to do, and the court noted that. The Iowa before the U.S. Supreme Court was saying that the lower court in Iowa reasoned that so long as the arresting officer had probable cause to make a custodial arrest, there need not, in fact, have been a custodial arrest. Court says we granted certiorari 523 U.S. 1019, and we now reverse, because the idea that they could have arrested him, they're about to arrest him, is not good enough. when the citations are written and the interaction between the subject and the officer is going to be the handing of a summons. There's not a formal arrest been communicated to the subject. He has a right to expect he's not going to be searched incident to arrest. He has a right to expect he's not going to be searched incident to a citation, which Knowles versus Iowa prohibits, and can I would submit.
Can they change their mind after they write the summons and decide to arrest?
That sort of question, Your Honor, is hinted at in Knowles and not addressed by the Supreme Court. How far can it go? I'd find the page and cite it to Your Honor if I knew exactly where it was. But I would submit no, that citizens have a right to expect there's a fork in the road. And when the officers approach that vehicle and get this person out of that vehicle, they're going to communicate to that person, you're under arrest, we're handing you citations. And once they choose a fork, unless something happens to change the picture, something's in plain view perhaps, or who knows what, that a subject has the right to expect that his rights are going to be respected according to the fork in the road that the officers have chosen, unless something new happens to change those circumstances.
Did something new happen by virtue of the way he responded or did not respond to the questions?
Right. It wasn't pointed to by the state in its answering brief. It is in the transcript, as John noted, about questions that was put to him, and he appeared nervous, I think, is what the officer said about, I would suggest that that's too vague a circumstance to justify a fear of officer safety suddenly arising here. It's not enough for an arrest, certainly. People feel nervous, anxious, perhaps dealing with police officers. And the idea it can be starting to get down the road toward an officer safety concern. I would submit was too vaguely described or articulated by the officers here to get to a Terry moment between the two of them, Your Honor. Anything further, Your Honors? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Deputy Attorney General Gregory Smith on behalf of the state. Your Honors, if I may, given the fact-intensive nature of this case, I think it's appropriate to back up and go through from start to finish what happened here. We have two Wilmington police officers in their squad car on routine patrol. It's a marked vehicle, and they observe within the city of Wilmington an 89 Buick LeSabre drive past. This car has a cardboard license plate. The license plate itself, that essentially sends off, well, that's unusual. They decide to run the tag, which they're able to do from their laptop computers within their patrol cars. That license comes back, the license plate comes back as expired. On that basis, they then activate their emergency equipment and stop the vehicle. At that point, that's clearly a stop of the vehicle is a seizure. The state is not suggesting otherwise. There's no factual dispute here that the police didn't have probable cause to stop Mr. Monroe for the expired tags. Once he's pulled over, the police exit their vehicle, approach Mr. Monroe. They ask him for his license and his insurance. And registration. He's able to provide a license. He provides the expired registration, and at that time he produces no insurance. The police officers return to their vehicle with the documents that Mr. Monroe has provided. They go back to their vehicle primarily to check his license to see if that's expired. In doing that, they determine, no, he has a valid driver's license. They're simultaneously checking does Mr. Monroe have an active arrest warrant or a capias? That is not the case. Mr. Monroe does not have a capias or arrest warrant. However, in checking for those items, the police do observe that Mr. Monroe has an extensive criminal history, specifically including weapons offenses. And they specifically testified that they did see that as they were doing the onboard computer check during the suppression hearing. At that point, they then go back to Mr. Monroe's car. They then ask him to step out of his vehicle. Asking him to step out of his vehicle at that point is very much in line with well-settled precedent from the United States Supreme Court in Pennsylvania v. Mims. The police are allowed to ask a driver to step out without anything further for any traffic citation, just to step out of his vehicle. So that there should be no question that step is okay. Now we arrive to the pat-down. Much of the I'm struggling for the right word. Much of the trouble in this case about, you know, why did things happen is comes from some of the statements the officers made about what they intended to do next about the inventory. And the state submits that the officer's subjective intent as to where this would have gone later if they had gotten to actually search the vehicle is in large part irrelevant to what, in fact, did happen with Mr. Monroe at that moment.
Mr. Smith, let me just interrupt you here for a moment.
Yes, sir.
The crux of the issue here is the pat-down search. Is that correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And is it the state's position that critical to the legality of the pat-down search is the information about the defendant's prior criminal history and especially the weapons offenses?
Yes, Your Honor, that's absolutely critical.
That is, without that information, there would have been no probable cause to do a pat-down?
I'm not sure there would have been reasonable articulable suspicion.
Right.
Yes. Yes, that is absolutely critical to the reasonable articulable suspicion. And if I may just emphasize that the state is not suggesting that if the police were just driving down the road and, well, we know so-and-so who's standing on the corner has a criminal history, they're entitled to pat him down. That's not what this case is. This is a valid traffic stop. That is the additional element to the knowledge of the prior criminal history, including weapons offenses. So it's not, we're not in a Jones v. State scenario, anything like that.
Well, are you saying that whenever someone has a criminal history of a weapons offense, that if they're stopped for a traffic offense, they can be patted down?
Yes, Your Honor, for officer safety. As long as the police are aware of that, yes.
No matter how old the conviction and no matter what happens on the scene?
Your Honor, I don't want to suggest if I don't know how, if we're going to get into 40, 50, 60 years old. I'm not sure. I don't want to speculate what the state would say at that point. But clearly here, we're not talking about attenuated crimes.
When was his conviction in this case? Is that in the record?
Your Honor, in the appendix is the motion that the state filed to sentence Mr. Monroe as a habitual offender. And that included all of the triggering convictions, including there were both state and then the federal conviction.
So can you tell me when the weapons offense convictions were?
I believe this was the late 90s. I apologize. I can.
But that is in the appendix?
Yes. But, Your Honor, I do want to emphasize, it did not have to be a conviction. This can just be the knowledge of something that gave the officers a reasonable belief that Mr. Monroe had previously been armed. And that that's certainly supported by this court's jurisprudence in King v. State, that officers have, they're entitled to rely on the authenticity of what they find in Delgis from their onboard computers. But that is very much the critical moment. After Mr. Monroe is out of his car, he has his hands placed on the trunk of his own vehicle. And at this point, we're not in an arrest situation. This is very much just the Terry pat-down. And as Officer Fox asks, you know, do you have any weapons? There's no response. He feels on, as he starts to pat him down on the small of his back, he feels a hard object. Mr. Monroe says, this is a back brace. And then the officer simultaneously lifts up the shirt and then sees the handle of the gun.
So the pat-down was underway before there was a lack of response. Do you have any weapons or drugs on you?
That is my understanding of the record, that Mr. Monroe was silent.
But the pat-down was underway before that question was asked?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I may have misunderstood your question. Since there's never actually a response to that question, the pat-down starts.
Right.
And this ends up being a revolver loaded with 5 rounds, and then the situation deteriorates. Mr. Monroe tries to break free, and the officers have to restrain him. And only after that point, when he is placed under arrest, does a further search of Mr. Monroe reveal the pouch of ammunition in the front containing 29 rounds of ammunition for this weapon.
I'm a little bit confused about your argument. The opposing counsel cites the record for the officer saying the reason why Monroe was being patted down wasn't because the officer thought he had committed a crime. The reason was because you were going to be placed in the rear of our vehicle while we conducted an inventory search. So you're arguing that this court should affirm because, having determined that he had a prior weapons offense, they had reasonable basis to be concerned for officer safety, but the officer says that's not what we were doing.
The officer I certainly agree the officer gives different rationales for why it takes place. He does testify at trial that he was concerned about officer safety. I believe that's in the state's appendix at B-16.
Is the court's ruling in the appendices or attached to the briefs anywhere?
No, Your Honor, it is not.
Tell me what you understand the ruling to have been.
My understanding from, if I may just say, it was not the cleanest of suppression hearings. At that point, Mr. Monroe was pro se. Certainly the state would not have been upset if the record were a little bit cleaner than it is. It's almost as if at the kind of conclusion of the pat-down part of the suppression hearing, then the court moves on to some of the issues relating to trial management and the witnesses. And based on the court's questioning of one of the officers during the suppression hearing, that it's the state's understanding that going through, did you know about the weapons offenses, that was essentially the basis for Superior Court's denial of the motion to suppress.
But we don't know here today what the judge said.
No.
How are we to evaluate whether the judge was right in what she said if we don't know what she said?
Your Honor, the state can merely ask for the court to look at what is in the record, and admittedly, it is. It would be nice if there were a little more in there than there is, but the fact is, what's in the record certainly is enough for this court to reasonably believe that based on those questions, that was the only fact articulated for the reasonable articulable suspicion to support the Terry stop.
Well, wait a second. I'm even more confused now. You said that although you agreed that the officer testified at the suppression hearing that he was doing the pat down because he was about to put the defendant in the back of his automobile, but that at trial he said that he was concerned about his prior weapons conviction. How could the trial court have made a ruling on the motion to suppress based upon a statement that wasn't made until after the ruling?
Your Honor, I'm sorry if I may have misspoken. There's B4 in the transcript, B4, and I believe also B6 and 7, and that's specifically from the suppression hearing. The officer does testify regarding the knowledge of the weapons offenses. That certainly was a fact that was in evidence that Superior Court was able to consider at the time of the suppression hearing.
Let me just to make sure I understand: is it your are you saying that the ruling of the court was never transcribed, or that it was transcribed but not put into the appendix?
Your Honor, of all the transcripts that I am aware of that exist, I have not seen anything it's not part of the transcript.
You're saying, as far as you're aware, the ruling wasn't transcribed?
That to the extent that there's an express ruling made, it's part of what we have in the appendix. If there had been anything else, I am not aware of it. It was my understanding I have all of the transcripts that were out there at this point.
Well, I can't find the ruling. Are you saying it's in there and I missed it?
No, Your Honor. I'm not saying that there is the express for these reasons Superior Court holds the motion to suppress is denied. It's certainly not spelled out with that level of specificity. The state has had to read the questioning and then basically the questioning and the testimony both from counsel, from Mr. Monroe to the witness, and from the court to the witness, take those things as a whole, and then obviously the motion to suppress was denied, and read the facts that are in the record into the basis for the denial.
All right.
I may return to one point. What the officers were saying about what they intended to do, their subjective beliefs are not dispositive of this case. The state cited Wren v. United States, and then in support of Wren's statement that subjective intentions play no role in the probable cause analysis of a Fourth Amendment question, the state also handed up a United States Supreme Court case that came out on the 22nd out of Utah. And Wren is cited in there, and again, the officer's subjective statements as to what they might do are not going to be dispositive of the analysis. That's simply the point the state would wish to make with that case. If the court has no further questions, then the state will conclude and pray that this court affirm the judgment of the Superior Court and Mr. Monroe's convictions. Thank you.
I'm going to make a few points in rebuttal, Your Honors. The proposition offered by Mr. Smith for the state was that a traffic stop plus a criminal history equals a pat-down. and that is not a constitutional proposition. Just the practical reasons alone of trying to assess what criminal history exactly is going to get you a pat down. Is it an arrest? Is it a conviction? Is it do we give white-collar felons a better deal than we give street thugs? I would submit that that proposition has never been tolerated by any court, and if we were to start tolerating that here, we have an unmanageable situation for our law enforcement officers in these courts reviewing things.
Two questions.
Yes,
what was the sequence of events as between the defendant being asked the question, do you have any weapons, giving a response on the one hand and the pat-down search on the other? Which happened first?
As I understand it, Your Honor, the two officers reapproached his vehicle, asked him to step out of the vehicle. They have a summons in their hands. I think they say in one spot, we want to explain to you, Mr. Monroe, what this is about. Would you step to the back of your vehicle with us? In that process, I guess, of escorting him to the back of the vehicle, I assume, there's some interaction. Mr. Monroe, do you have any weapon on you? Do you have any drugs on you? Something to that
the effect. Answer is the question and non-response preceded the pat-down.
He appears nervous and is unresponsive, I think, is what the officers say. And then Mr. Monroe puts your hands in the back of that vehicle, and at that point the physical interaction begins. That's my best understanding of what the police officers would have us understand from their interaction with him.
All right. Second question is, can you shed any light on the missing ruling of the court?
I can't, Your Honor. I also spoke about this matter with Mr. Smith. I came into it somewhat late, and I was confident, as he was confident from what he told me, that we had everything that was of record below, and perhaps a communication was made from the court to counsel and to Mr. Monroe that I denied the motion. It was off the record, perhaps, to counsel when Mr. Monroe was being brought up to the courtroom. He was, I think, detained at the time of this event. He was pro se. I mean, it's not clear why a court reporter did not write down a particular ruling and rationale from the judge below. I assume we have everything that was done below, Your Honor, on the record at least.
Well, it does say excerpt.
Is that? It does say that, Your Honor. And I can't say anything more about that, Your Honor. I just don't know. The prior conviction that supposedly gave the officer concern was not described, to the court, to the Superior Court judge. Also, it was described as a weapons offense. The age of that offense, the nature of the offense wasn't described beyond weapons offense. So there is something in the appendix, certainly, that would be more information to this court, but was not given to the court below at that time. Your articulation about officer safety, and Your Honor explored that a little bit with the question about, well, when did this perhaps become a more tense interaction, perhaps, at some level. It's not pointed to by the officers as a basis for why they're going to search Mr. Monroe. Their basis is we're going to get that vehicle off the street, we're going to inventory that vehicle. When I inventory a vehicle, I place the subject in the back of my vehicle, and I'm not going to have a potentially armed person sitting behind me in my vehicle while I'm in the front of the vehicle doing business. And so the officer safety articulation that's attempted here as far as you seem nervous to that effect is vague, I would put to the court in the transcript, and it's not argued by the state, really, nor by the officers below for why they were doing the search. So it becomes almost an excuse for doing or justifying the Terry pat-down and not really the basis for why it was done. And if they're not offering it as a basis for officer safety, then is it really credible? And should this court endorse that kind of a officer safety concern, so to speak, which this court has previously said could be an all-encompassing exception that everybody feels unsafe on the streets of a city, and then we get into endorsing everything involving strangers and police officers, and strangers may have a criminal history.
Well, we don't know what testimony the trial judge found to be credible, though, right?
We don't. We don't know exactly that point. You're right. You're correct, Your Honor. Anything else I can address for the court? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you both. We appreciate the arguments, and we'll take the matter under consideration and stand in recess.
Please rise.